And 7 minutes past 1 o'clock, it is today's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper and Bonnie Berman with you on this Monday afternoon. Well, we're back with our collaborative divorce program. We have a panel of experts on hand. Collaborative divorce is an alternative, non-adversarial method which can avoid court battles and minimize legal expense.
It can keep children and families more likely to remain close. With us are members of Florida Collaborative Trainers. First, certified public accountant Paul Garcia. A CPA works with a couple to provide accounting, tax, and consulting services and litigation support. He's with us by phone. Welcome to you, Paul Garcia.
Welcome, Paul.
Thank you very much.
Also on the panel is Rose Marie Roth, the founder of the Collaborative Family Institute. She's a collaborative trainer as well as a University of Miami law professor. Welcome to you, Rose Marie Roth.
Thank you so much. I'm glad to be here.
Also with us in the studio is collaborative family law attorney Robert Merlin. He's also a qualified collaborative trainer and worked on the collaborative legislative bill.
And we round out our guest with Dr. Lana Stern, a psychologist and marriage and family therapist and family mediator. Welcome to you, Dr. Stern.
Thank you very much. I'm very happy to be here.
Good to have you all. I'd like to begin with you, Rose Marie Roth. You're an attorney. You actually brought the collaborative process to Florida. So tell us how that came about. And if you would, just a little sketch of what the process is.
Certainly. In 1999, I attended a seminar that the ABA, the American Bar Association, had in Miami Beach, and one of the breakouts was on collaborative law, and it piqued my interest, and I went to listen to it, and I thought, oh, wow, this is really the way family law should be practiced. It's a voluntary process. It works outside of the court system. It's voluntary. The people agree to do this. It is transparent. It's private. And the people have to act in a certain way. They have to be respectful and civil to one another. And we are able to accomplish that certainly with the contribution that our mental health professional, Lana Stern, makes to that, and she'll explain that part. The process is different from the litigation because there is no positioning. The people work together to achieve a win-win settlement. And we help them do that. We guide them. The professionals guide them through this process because it becomes outcome determinative by the parties. They are the ones who really decide how this should end up. We use something called interest-based negotiation where the people focus on the goals and the interests. The goals are where they want to get to, and the interest is what underlies the goals, why they want to get there. I always compare this during the Vietnam era, the Vietnam War, when they said there was a saying that war was not healthy for children and other living things. Well, my feeling is that court is not healthy for parents and children. And that really has been borne out because more than 80% of the cases that go through the collaborative process succeed.
Well, of course, most divorces have a big financial side to them, of course. And we have certified public accountant Paul Garcia with us. Paul, tell us how you participate as a CPA in these collaborative divorces.
My pleasure. So as a certified financial expert in this field, we are the facilitators and the educators of the financial information, sometimes for the parties and certainly for the attorneys also. So we gather the information about the family finances. We identify, we clarify, we sort of prioritize the financial needs and goals and concerns of the party. We're not directed by the court. We're actually here to conform to the wishes of the parties. We educate themselves about their financial situation. We certainly are in a position to validate the emotions when they arise. A lot of people have a lot of concerns about their finances. Typically, there's a blind party, financially speaking. In other words, you know, they may not be the financially savvy one of the estate, of the marital estate. So that particular person may need information. They may need a little bit of hand-holding. And certainly, we're there to facilitate and educate them.
Would you say that that's usually the most difficult area in this process?
Very, Certainly, it is one of the most difficult areas because, you know, they're going through a very difficult situation, psychologically speaking and emotionally speaking, regarding the breakup of their marriage. Here they are trying to decipher financial information, something so strange to them. So, yes, it is certainly an area that I facilitate and kind of lend some tranquility in their minds.
Of course, each situation is unique, Paul, but is there sort of a give and take in that there's offers and counteroffers where you've come to a common meeting?
There's no doubt that during the process, as the process moves, I will be presenting different types of financial information. You know, and once I gather the information, it's sort of like a, you know, moving up the ladder. You know, you can't really go to the fourth step unless you do one and two. So you gather their information and you start sort of opening up their vision regarding their assets, their liabilities, their income, their expenses. You know, some of them have fears regarding, you know, what's going to be my future life? How am I going to now be able to afford basically two households? Because, you know, I'm going to still be paying some alimony, some support, you know. And also, a lot of people have different questions about their tax moving forward, their tax liabilities. So we kind of assess their tax consequences. Have different scenarios. We try to visualize a lot of these complex financial matters by presenting various schedules, you know, making them very easy, user-friendly, let's say. We make a hard topic very, very, very easy, and they appreciate that because we're sort of going down to very common levels of sometimes very complex financial scenarios.
And Attorney Robert Merlin, you were a collaborator on the Collaborative Law Process Act, created by the Florida legislature and signed into law by Governor Scott in March. Would you tell us what that is and its significance and the repercussions that it will have?
It's a recognition of the collaborative process in Florida, and actually the state of Florida has a policy of promoting amicable resolution of disputes, and it's included in the new statute. In fact, the statute also says that the collaborative process is a unique non-adversarial process that preserves a working relationship between the parties and reduces the emotional and financial toll of litigation. There's a recognition that litigation, resolving disputes in court, empowering a judge to make that determination for a family, does not necessarily work when it comes to family law, and that the parties, a couple, has more control over their own destiny and can do things privately instead of going to court. And the statute was created to have standards that exist. If an attorney is going to use the collaborative process, certain things have to be done, like having a written contract that we use in all collaborative cases. And there are rules that will go along with the statute. They were presented to they were filed with the Supreme Court two Fridays ago, and I'll go up there and argue them before the Supreme Court in a number of months.
Okay.
And Rosemarie Roth, as an attorney, what are some of the most common difficulties in this process? And also, if I'm a high-priced divorce attorney, do I look at this, feel a little threatened by this process?
Absolutely. One of the things that the people who litigate who do not think this is really a worthwhile endeavor, they really, I think, look at a case and they decide how much a case is worth. I think that their motivation, certainly we all want to make money, but I don't know that their concern for their clients and the outcome of the case for a family is as important to them as it is to people who collaborate, because the damage to families after a case is over is horrendous. The fallout to the children, to the other members of the extended family is so horrible that I think it's something that collaborative attorneys look at more carefully and try to get their clients to act more civilly. And they do, actually. We do work on communication skills so that they're able to co-parent their children afterward. Very difficult for people to co-parent after they've gone through depositions, sat in court, been peppered with all kinds of questions and experts and so on and so forth. Very hard to come together in an amicable way and decide how you're going to treat the kids and work out things together.
Well, let's bring in Dr. Stern. As a mental health professional, Dr. Lana Stern, does that mean that you're often instrumental in not only the emotional aspects of the separation and people's behavior, but with the custody arrangements in the cases of children?
The mental health professional does work on the parenting plan with the family. And it is the family that works together to decide what is in the best interest of the children.
So who actually comes up with the arrangements of the custody arrangements?
Well, first of all, there is no such thing as custody. Now it's shared parental responsibility we want parents to co-parent together in the most amicable way possible. Because there is a divorce, the family continues. The living arrangements of a husband and wife may differ, but the family remains together, and they really need to be able to co-parent together. So with the input from the family, we work up a plan that is in the best interest of the children first and the family.
So as a neutral healthcare, mental health professional, rather, in this collaborative process, is your role also of a therapist or not?
No, definitely not a therapist. This is a totally different role for a mental health professional. They're really facilitating the process. There's really a need for the mental health professional to sort of, I guess, moderate the meetings and to have people focused on the outcome, a positive outcome. What is really divorce? It's a legal process with lots of financial implications, but it's really run by the emotions. So keeping the emotions in check, really making certain that the attorneys remain with their collaborative focus, which is working together with the family to come up with the best possible solution in court.
So that's interesting. So you work not only with the parties and their children at times, but with your own members of the collaborative team.
I would say that the mental health professional is really the facilitator of the process and the moderator of many of the meetings.
We're speaking with members of the Florida Collaborative Trainers. Rosemarie Roth is an attorney, Robert Merlin also. Lana Stern is a therapist, she's a PhD therapist, and Paul Garcia is a CPA. Paul, if we've heard, we are sorry to hear that you've had some little bit of personal trouble. If you need to go, that's okay.
Thank you very much. I can stay. I am okay.
Okay. We're going to take a short break and we'll be right back.
And we're back with today's topical currents, Joseph Cooper and Bonnie Berman. We're talking about collaborative divorce and a few other implications of that with Paul Garcia. He's a certified public accountant. Also, Rosemarie Roth and Robert Merlin. They're both attorneys. And also, Dr. Lana Stern, who's a psychologist and family therapist and family mediator. Our telephone number, if you'd like to join in discussion with a comment or a question, you're certainly welcome. 1-800-743-9576. 1-800-743-WLRN. Also email, that's radio@WLRN.org. Perhaps you have an experience with collaborative divorce. If not, maybe you have some questions about how it works. Again,
to see if it's right for you.
1-800-743-9576.
Robert Merlin, so piggybacking on Joe's question about how litigators divorce attorneys feel about the collaborative process, I wanted to mention you yourself were in that role until you joined the collaborative process. So two questions. One is, why did you change direction? And the second question is, are more and more litigators turning to this process?
Well, I used to litigate. That's correct. I was I described myself as a pit bull, and I'm a reformed pit bull now. I knew that there had to be a better way to resolve family disputes than fighting in court. You're empowering a third party, a judge, to make decisions for a family, and that judge just doesn't know everything about that family. And also, the attorneys have a tendency to have disputes between themselves that get in the way of resolving things. So I actually went to a training that Rosemary had, a simple training more than 10 years ago, and I thought it was an interesting process. I thought I could do it. And with receiving more and more training, I decided that this was really the healthier way to go, and I chose to no longer litigate. I will handle cases that technically are in court, but I will make my client and the other attorney aware of the fact that I will not go to court. We can resolve things outside of court. The choices shouldn't only be going to court.
If somebody's engaged in the collaborative process, can they abandon that midstream and turn to litigation? And the converse of that, if they're involved in a nasty adversarial divorce, can they abandon that and turn to the collaborative process?
So the most unique aspect of the collaborative process is that the attorneys are dedicated to helping the couple resolve their differences outside of court, not fighting in court. A case can be currently pending and the parties can decide they want to use the collaborative process. So the case will be put on hold, so to speak. It's called a stay, and the parties can go through the process and resolve everything, then go back to the judge to approve an agreement. And also, the vast majority of collaborative matters start without anything pending in court. But there is an agreement that's signed, as I said, the participation agreement, the written contract that says this is a voluntary process. The parties can leave anytime they want to. Either one of them can choose to leave, but if they do, the attorneys will not represent them in contested litigation. So we're
on either side.
That's correct. And so we're dedicated to helping the couple resolve their differences, and we're not going to use court as a threat to force a party to do something that they really don't want to do.
Rosemary, you wanted to add something?
Yeah, actually, and that is part of the motivation that keeps people in the process. Aside from keeping them communicating with one another, the fact that they don't want to have to go through everything all over again. Even if they decide to leave the process, any discovery documents, financial information can go with them. But because the process is confidential, everything that has gone on in there remains in that process. They can't bring that to the other attorney or even into court. But it really is so effective that when Bob said, you know, the information that we've gotten so far about the success rate, it really is, I see in Miami, far greater than 80% of success.
Wow. Dr. Stern, without violating any privacies, of course, could you give us some examples of some of the cases you've had so that people can get an idea of how it works and what some of the roadblocks were?
Well, a lot of times couples enter into a divorce, obviously, because there are problems. Those problems can easily spill into what we would like to have as a peaceful interaction between them. So the MHP really can intervene in a lot
mental health professional.
The mental health professional can intervene, into a multitude of situations, just from simple misunderstandings, perhaps between the couple, to simple misunderstandings in and among the team members, to real crisis situations. We've had parties who have had substantial alcohol or drug issues. And because there is a mental health professional involved in the process, it can be held up or stopped until treatment can be established for that person, until they're well enough to continue in the divorce process. It's also helpful with problem solving. Oftentimes people have very, very different ideas about how to solve a simple problem. So the mental health professional, with the help of the team, can work with a couple in helping them solve whatever issue it is. And it's also a support system for both the professionals, if there are any questions, and for the couple, if they're having difficulties somehow with the other person or the process or any other way, shape, and form. The mental health person has the ability to caucus with everyone, with the attorney, with the financial person, with a couple, individually. So they really have quite a bit of ability to negotiate and make the process work.
Well, who decides, and maybe this is a question for you, Paul, is someone given alimony as an outcome? I mean, I know you don't call it custody of children. Is it called alimony after in the collaborative process?
The legal terms don't change. So yes, we call it alimony. However, there's other names. You can call it support. And it is determined basically by Florida statutes. However, the parties can make their own determination in this process as to, the amount. What I do is I paint the painting based upon their needs and the ability to pay of the parties. But at the end of the day, they make their own decisions. Sometimes we have had cases where there is absolutely no need for one of the parties to receive alimony because they don't have the need. However, because they may want to have extra fundings in the future to be set aside for their retirement, the parties may agree that there should be some fundings in the future, and we can call that support. So the beauty of this process is that they can make their own decisions and they utilize our professional abilities to get them there.
Does this process ease up a little bit on the tendency for people to be vindictive in these matters?
I think it does, and I think part of that is done very well with the work that Lana provides to them, because there is something called expectations of conduct, certain ways to behave. And one of the important things is that the professionals model behavior for the clients, because if the professionals are at each other's throats, that isn't going to help very much.
Say running down one parent versus another by one parent or something. I'm sure that goes on a lot.
That goes against the code that we have. Instead of increasing the animosity, we do just the opposite. We work toward peaceful solutions. We do not encourage the fight between the parties, because we really focus on the children and the after effect of a divorce. When you've slit each other's throat and you've said the most terrible things to each other, how can you possibly go on after that and be a family or be supportive for children and function in the most positive way after the fact?
Again, our number, perhaps you're considering divorce. You don't have to use your real name, by the way. Perhaps the collaborative process is right for you and you'd like to find out, or you have an experience with it. 1-800-743-9576. 1-800-743-9576. Email is fast. It's radio@wlrn.org. We're speaking with members of the Florida Collaborative Trainers. Our next break, and we'll be right back.
And we return 33 minutes past 1 o'clock. It is today's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper and Bonnie Berman. We're talking about collaborative divorce with Paul Garcia, a CPA, also Rosemarie Roth and Robert Merlin. They're both attorneys and founders of the Collaborative Family Institute. And Dr. Lana Stern, who's a psychologist and marriage and family therapist. Again, our number 1-800-743-9576.
What are the risks of collaborative divorce? It can't be absolutely perfect. So who is best to address that? Would that be you, Robert, or Rosemarie?
I'm happy to address it.
Okay.
I guess you could say the downside is if it doesn't work out, a client is going to have to get another attorney to go litigate. But the chances are very high that that's not going to happen, as Rosemarie said.
What are the statistics?
More than 80% of the cases that start collaboratively end collaboratively.
Okay.
Which means they end in an agreement.
Right.
Right.
What about cases where you hear all the time, well, I'm going back to court and petition for more support and things like that.
Like an appeal.
So in the collaborative process, there aren't appeals because they come to an agreement. So you can't appeal something that you've mutually agreed to. And in our agreements, we have a provision that says if you're going to have a dispute in the future, come back into the collaborative process, and if you can't resolve it that way, then we'll bring in a mediator, and if you still can't resolve it, then you'll go to court, instead of the first choice being to go to court.
Or family circumstances change after the...
And that's okay, and that happens in families. And just because you've done things collaboratively doesn't mean that there can't be a change in circumstances that warrant changing the terms of the agreement that
so
they entered into.
Would they come back to you at that
yes.
point then? I'm thinking when Paul was talking about how if somebody doesn't need alimony, but what if those circumstances change, would they be able to, you know, reconvene? Would you be able to reconvene and then perhaps alimony
right.
would be given?
Assuming that they did not agree initially that there would never be alimony, for instance. But on issues of children, that always exists. It's not possible to have an agreement that waives the possibility of modifying anything to do with parenting or child support.
Yeah, oftentimes a parenting plan may be written for a very young child, but as the years go by, that plan may need to be adjusted, or someone may be moving out of town, or there could be all sorts of changes that may need to be reworked in the parenting plan.
We have lots of calls and emails, so we're going to ask you to at least be as concise as possible.
Okay. First caller, we have Valerie in Miami. Valerie, hi.
Hi, good afternoon. Thank you for doing this program. I have already been through divorce, so it doesn't apply to me at this moment. But my question is this. It was my experience. I wanted to do collaborative law. I had a collaborative lawyer, and my partner did not want to participate in that way. What advice would you give somebody in that situation to perhaps make it more appealing or more viable?
Well, to use the collaborative process, both sides have to agree to do it. But if one wants to use it and the other one doesn't, a real good thing to do is to go send both of the parties to someone like Lana, who's a neutral mental health professional, to talk to them about the process, or an attorney as well. Use a neutral professional who can give an unbiased perspective on what would happen if they choose the collaborative process and what would happen if they choose a different process.
And another thing is that people have to understand the downside of going to court as opposed to using the collaborative process, because the cost increases substantially when you go to court, and the fallout, the emotional impact, especially on children, is very great.
Right.
So they have to weigh that and decide, how do you want to go? How do you want to do this?
I also think that there's a lot of disillusionment about what happens when you do go to court, that the judge will hear your side and will definitely feel one way or the other, but that doesn't always happen.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. Thanks for your call.
Thanks, Valerie.
That. Thank you.
And we'll move along to Aaron. Aaron in Hallandale. Hi there.
Hi. I was divorced a little over 20 years ago, and at that time, I went through a mediation process, and I was informed then that there was no choice but to agree to lifetime alimony. It seems to me that as long as there's a lifetime alimony requirement here in the state of Florida, that people are just not going to undergo or participate in a collaborative process when that is hanging over their heads. It seems to me that that as long as there's lifetime alimony hanging over the person at that particular time who's making more money, that's going to sour the process.
Robert Merlin's going to tackle
yes.
this, Aaron.
So permanent alimony exists now, and the collaborative process is certainly being used. But what happens in the collaborative process, just as in mediation, the parties choose what to do. The parties have a choice whether to agree to permanent alimony. I'm sorry that you were told during mediation that you didn't have a choice. You absolutely had a choice. And it may have been in court, a judge would have awarded permanent alimony, but you have a choice. So, yes, the collaborative process may result in permanent alimony, but it may result in no alimony, even though the law says permanent alimony is possible.
Okay, Aaron, thanks for your call.
Thank you.
Let me give a little disclaimer here that we're not giving any specific legal advice on our program, but just general information for our listeners.
Right. We have an emailer, Alexa, wants to know what the difference is between collaborative divorce and settlement and mitigation. And do both parties bring their own attorney for representation in the divorce, collaborative divorce, or does the agency provide their attorney? Okay.
In the collaborative process, each person has an attorney who has been trained in the process, because training is extremely important. There is what we call a paradigm shift that attorneys have to have when they go through this process, which means they look at things differently. They are not bullfighters. They are able to make a shift, and they don't position. They look at things more reasonably. But another important point that I think people have to understand of why this process is so much better is that people have an opportunity to be heard. No two people see the same issue the same way. So if one party is expressing their view about, let's say, the house, and the other one has a different view, they have an opportunity to be heard, to hear what that other person has to say. They don't have to agree with them, but they have to acknowledge, I understand what you're saying. That never happens in court.
Okay. And Robert, did you want to address the other question, the difference between collaborative divorce and settlement and mitigation?
Right. So what the woman is talking about is mediation.
That's okay.
Each party chooses their own attorney. In the collaborative process, it's the whole process from the beginning of identifying what the issues are to helping the parties identify potential ways to resolve a dispute, them choosing the resolution. We write up the agreement, we present it in court. Mediation is a very limited scope process of just negotiating a settlement. The vast majority of mediations, for instance, take place while a case is pending in court and without a mental health professional. We're able to bring, you can use neutral professionals in mediation just as in collaborative, but it typically isn't done. And so in the collaborative process, we have the benefit of a Paul Garcia or a Lana Stern sitting right there at the table with the parties to help them resolve their differences.
I wanted to ask if it's only for those who are legally married, collaborative divorce. What if people have what is that called?
Common law
marriage, or are just living together, or can they also use the collaborative process?
Yes, but first of all, there's no common law in Florida. That was abrogated many, many years ago. But that's okay. There are people who do have a relationship, and maybe they own assets, maybe they have kids together.
Right.
Certainly it can be worked out. They have to... It's a voluntary process, and it certainly is usable. It's adaptable to that, as it is adaptable to paternity cases and support issues and that sort of thing.
The process is actually being used in other areas as well, such as probate disputes. Someone dies, the family is fighting over the division of the inherited assets. It's been used.
Well, they wouldn't fight over things like that.
No.
Yeah, certainly not.
Never have that.
Right. It's any type of dispute where a healthier method of resolving it is better for the parties participating in.
Are you all certified to be collaborative
participants?
Yes. I mean, how is it a certification, and who gives that certification?
Well, right now, there is no certification. We have certification in place ready to be presented to the Supreme Court, but not yet. But yes, it will be, but it isn't yet. But we do have trainings, and it's, in fact, we...
You train people, all of you.
The four of us, yes, we do trainings. But people think they're getting certified. They're really not. They're just... becoming trained. Eventually, there will be certification.
And you'll have to have that certification.
Yeah, hopefully.
The training will be an important part of the certification.
Absolutely.
But Bonnie, you raise an interesting point, because as of right now, nothing stops a professional, such as an attorney, from holding themselves out as being a collaborative attorney.
Right.
So if you do a search on the internet of collaborative attorneys in Miami, you'll see all sorts of people being listed, and we know because we're the trainers here that a very significant number of them have never been trained. They don't know what the collaborative process is. So for a member of the public, if someone holds themselves out as being a collaborative attorney or mental health professional or financial professional, you should ask what their training was. Did they receive training? How long ago did they receive it? How many programs have they gone to?
Okay. That's good to know.
The collaborative process has a structure to it for very specific reasons. There's a safety and trust factor that is built into the whole process because we work with parties before each meeting, each team meeting. We have an agenda so everyone knows what topic will be discussed. There's a time limit as opposed to, I know mediations can go on for 8, 10, 12 hours. This way, everyone is so prepared that the structure really is a very, very big safety factor. There's no surprises when we are negotiating and talking about the needs and interests of the parties and helping them solve the issues.
We're going to take a short break, and we promise to take as many of your calls as possible when we come back. We're speaking with the Florida Collaborative Trainers about collaborative law process and divorce. We'll be right back.
And we're back. It's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman, and also CPA Paul Garcia, attorneys Rosemary Roth and Robert Merlin, and psychologist and family therapist Dr. Lana Stern. There seems to be some questions whether clients can use their own attorneys. Both parties use their own attorneys, and also people want to know about whether it can apply to separation. Mr. Merlin?
Well, certainly the process can be used for a separation. In Florida, we do not have a legally recognized separation process in court. Some states do, but a couple could agree, for instance, use the collaborative process to resolve all of their issues and separate instead of getting divorced. Or if you're not married, certainly you can deal with all of the issues involved in living your separate lives, and maybe you have a child so that you're going to have something in common. As Rosemary said, the professionals need to be trained, but there literally is nothing requiring that now.
And each party has their own attorney.
Absolutely. Each right. party chooses their own attorney.
Yeah, okay.
Okay.
And we'll move along to another caller, Mike in Miami. Hi there. Mike, you're up.
Good afternoon. Great program. Actually, I went through a divorce about 8 years ago, and me and my ex-wife, we have one child. Thought it's in the best interest of both of us and our child is to have a very civilized divorce, and we did exactly that. And unfortunately, I didn't know about this process. I wish I did because it will clear the way for both the parents. But from experience, it's the best thing after sliced bread.
Our son is, thank you.
True.
Yes, our son is close to both of us. We're close to each other. There isn't a week that goes by without us talking to each other and talking to our son. So I encourage everybody to go through the process. It's great. And thank you very much for your work.
Thank you.
Thank
and that's
you.
Our
and
goal in the collaborative process.
And congratulations to both of you for being
you,
so
Mike.
Civil and adult.
Okay.
Thanks for your call. And next caller we have, this is Ed. Hello, Ed.
Hello.
Hi, welcome.
Thank you.
So
you have
what,
a comment or a question?
What was your experience? You had a collaborative divorce, correct?
Oh, that's correct. I did. And as I was listening to the show, it's pretty much the way that the panelists had explained it. Because I guess in any situation, when there's a great unknown that's out there, you really don't know what to expect. But through the collaborative process and the use and the presence of the different professionals, from the attorneys to the neutral mental health professional and the neutral financial planner, it just makes it all that much easier to go through the process, because you're already dealing with the fact that you're going through something that's traumatic, like a divorce that you probably never expected to go through in the first place. So rather than dealing with a whole bunch of things on different fronts, it's better to focus on one or two issues while you let the professionals help you with all the other issues that are in the process.
Did you always know you wanted to take that route and you didn't want to have a traditional divorce?
Actually, no. When the reality came forth that I was going to be going through a divorce, I was thinking, I didn't even know collaborative divorce was an option, actually. And so you can imagine the anxiety levels were just out the roof, because you hear all these stories about what happens when you go through a adversarial type of divorce, attorneys faxing back and forth, people getting angry at each other, depositions, trial, and there's really no good outcome. It's almost like a scorched earth kind of process. But when I did some research on the internet about the different options and I read more about collaborative, it turned out that appeared to be a viable option. So I contacted one of the attorneys that is a member of the Miami Institute, and I spoke to them and they explained to me what was the process. I spoke to my wife at the time, and we both agreed that that would be a much better option than going through the traditional adversarial role.
How did it affect your children?
It worked out very well. We still have a healthy relationship with the kids, and I speak to them quite often. My daughter, I have one daughter now that's in college, and I have one daughter that's a senior in high school. So all in all, I think it worked out well.
You know, between Ed and the last call, it occurs to me, and it's something I wonder about, how do even people know about the process? How do you get the word out so that people know there's an option to going through a divorce? Dr. Stern?
Well, this radio show certainly is very, very helpful in getting the word out, because that really is a problem. People do not know about this process, and it's so important that the world be known that there is an alternative to a litigated, horrible divorce. You can do it respectfully, you can do it civilly, and you can maintain relationships with your family, with your friends, with your in-laws after the fact, and attend the weddings and graduations and all the activities that take place. So thank you so much for giving us the opportunity for a show like this.
How about the cynic who says, now, I not only have to pay my attorney, but I'm paying for a therapist and a CPA and all this stuff.
Well, first, you're not paying for a therapist. My role is totally different. I don't do therapy in this process.
For a mediator.
Well, I'm not a mediator. I'm a facilitator of the process. I use the skills I have as a therapist, but
you're still paid.
I am paid. That's okay. Correct. In the end, I believe that the process is probably equal to or less than a highly litigated divorce process. So you have to decide how you want the divorce to proceed. You can spend a lot of money on litigation, or you can do it with a team approach, with support and help, and probably end up spending much less money and definitely saving the relationship between the parties.
Mm. Can I weigh in on this for a moment?
Yes.
You know, I can only say that anecdotally, I know of another acquaintance of mine that knew of a couple that was going through a divorce, and they went through the more traditional adversarial role. And the number that I heard when all was said was done was in the hundreds of thousands of dollars. And it didn't end very well for either of them, and at the time they had a very young infant. The trade-off that I would say about the collaborative process is that it's basically designed such that the professionals know how to move the meeting forward, and if there's any kind of issues that are going on during the meeting, the mental health professional gets the meeting back on track in order that all voices are being heard, all concerns are being addressed. The financial planner eliminates a lot of the anxieties that come out during the meeting when someone may be thinking that the other person's hiding the ball or hiding financial assets that would never get disclosed. So when you've got all those elements that are in there and you've got a group of individuals that are just invested in this process as much as the clients are, you find out that things move much more quickly. There's a better lines of communication that are open, and so the overall cost factor is going to be much less compared to a more traditional or adversarial process.
Well, I wanted, if Dr. Stern maybe, you do more than just collaborative law, the Florida Collaborative Trainers, you're trainers as well. So tell us about the trainings and what that entails and when they are, and contact information, because we're getting to the end of the program.
Well, there is a training for professionals that's coming up in November, November 11th, 12th, and 13th. We will be doing some a workshop at the University of Miami Law School in the spring this year. So we'll be training attorneys, the new crop of attorneys, to at least be aware of collaborative. In fact, one of our students is now the associate of Mr. Merlin.
Okay.
That's right. That's right.
And Rosemary?
Well, you can contact me at Rosemary Roth, R-L-S-R-O-T-H at gmail.com, about information for the training in November. And we're also doing one in Tampa in April, if that works for some of the people out there. And we really have been fortunate in the number of people that attend. So we sort of hope we're doing good in the community.
And we're also happy to go speak with groups of people.
What is your website? The Florida Collaborative Trainers.com. Okay. And do we have time for another call? Or?
I really don't
okay.
think so.
But. Well, we want to thank you all for being with us, and we hope that you, our listeners, enjoyed the program. Rosemary Roth is an attorney, founder of the Collaborative Family Law Institute, a collaborative law trainer and adjunct professor of collaborative family law at University of Miami. Robert Merlin, an attorney, managing partner of Robert J. Merlin, PA in Coral Gables, specializing in collaborative family law, and also a trainer and collaborator on the Florida Collaborative Law Process Act. Lana Stern, Dr. Lana Stern, PhD, licensed psychologist, marriage and family therapist, Florida Supreme Court certified family mediator, and parent coordinator in private practice in Coral Gables. Paul Garcia is a certified public accountant, serves as a neutral forensic in accountant in matrimonial dispute cases. We want to thank all of you for your participation and
thank you
for
very
being
much.
With us.
Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
And thanks for listening this hour. Apologies to those callers and emailers we couldn't get to. Our producer, Richard Ives, technical direction from online coordinator Jason Zabka. Polly Landis is associate producer. And we have free audio archives for download at our website. That's WLRN.org. And it's easy to link to a friend. Also, more information at the Topical Currents Facebook page with links, photos, and more. And tomorrow's program looks at how to detect shady, untruthful news reporting and claims, especially on the internet.
Especially during this political season.
No. Well, we'll speak with the author of the book, A Field Guide to Lies, Critical Thinking in the Information Age. Joseph Cooper and Bonnie Berman, thanks for making Public Radio your companion today. Stay tuned now for Here and Now, next from NPR News.